The Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. I will note this meeting is taking place under House Rule 10.01. Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Present.
Vice Chair Howard? Representative Tice, excuse for today's meeting. Representative Agbaje?
Present.
Agbaje, present. Representative Bliss?
Present.
Bliss, present. Representative Gomez?
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hassan?
Hassan is present.
Hassan, present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Herr?
Present.
Herr, present. Representative Juergens?
Juergens, present.
Juergens, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Farr?
Farr, present.
Farr, present. Representative Ryer?
Ryer, present.
Ryer, present. And then I'll circle back to Vice Chair Howard.
Howard, present.
Howard, present. And Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. The next item of business is the approval of the minutes from Thursday, February 10. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, I'll move the minutes, Madam Chair.
And members, are there any corrections or discussion about the minutes? If not, please unmute. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Next on the agenda, members, is a presentation on the Yes to Invest $2 billion in 2022. And I'm going to introduce Ms. Mavity soon, but one of the things I'd like her to clarify for me, when I first met with the 31 organizations that were suggesting this $2 billion campaign, I thought you were calling it the Bring It Home Minnesota campaign. But my agenda today calls it the Yes to Invest. So maybe if you could just, when you begin your remarks, just clarify how we're branding this particular campaign. We have several testifiers who will speak to the need of significant investments in housing across the state. We'll begin with the presentation from Ann Mavity with the Minnesota Housing Partnership. Ms. Mavity, welcome to the committee and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you so much. My name is Ann Mavity and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership. And let me just clarify something from the beginning, which is this committee meeting on its agenda has two items. The Yes to Invest, I will talk about and what that means. It's inclusive of the different proposals you've been hearing and that you will hear. Bring It Home is specific to rental assistance. And there will be an array of testifiers following me to talk about that specific proposal. So yes, today, I will be asked, oh, here, let me share my screen. Today, I will be asking you to invest in Minnesota, to invest in families by investing in housing, $2 billion in 2022. Last week, this committee heard testimony from housing advocates about an array of proposals that are being advanced to address specific challenges along the housing continuum. And so our message to invest $2 billion in 2022, it includes these proposals that you've already heard about and others you're going to hear about today and then the days and weeks to come. All of these proposals, in fact, add up to more than $2 billion, and they're all urgently needed. $2 billion won't fully solve our state's housing crisis, but it would make a historic and transformational leap forward. So we're here today to tell the story of why investing in housing is so essential for Minnesota to thrive. Previously, we've allocated just 0.3% of the state's budget in housing.
Could I just interrupt? Oh, is it possible to change the screen so you delete the, there it is, there we go.
Oh, I'm sorry, hang on. Let me stop sharing for a second. Are you seeing?
We didn't quite
my
get the bottom
screen?
Of your. We didn't quite get the bottom of your slide because the you had quite a few of the icons.
Hang on
the
one
screen.
Second. I apologize for that. Let me try something else. I so much apologize for that.
I think when you adjusted it, it seemed to improve it.
Is that better?
Can we see the whole screen now, members?
I am so sorry about
okay.
that. Can you see the whole screen?
If the bottom says housing and the thriving, is that the last line?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. I am great. So sorry about that. So once again, sorry about that. So, but we are here today to talk about why investing in housing is so essential. And we're asking you, and this is really important, to rethink and recalibrate our state's expectations for investing in housing. We've allocated just 0.3% of the state's budget in housing in the past, and the result is a persistent housing crisis. And now, you legislative leaders, you listen to your communities. If you invested $2 billion, it would transform the lives and the economy for generations, and yet still be less than 2% of our state's economy. Whoopsie, excuse me, what? I apologize for that. So let's talk about the growing consensus and understanding of how housing is linked to success in other parts of our lives. The governor, along with legislative leaders, has prioritized housing that way, and we are grateful. But today you're going to hear from business leaders, healthcare providers, educators, and they're saying, yes, we need to invest. It's an urgent crisis right now because housing is jobs, it's economic competitiveness, it's healthy families, it's children thriving, and it's diverse and inclusive communities. So $2 billion in 2022, let's talk about the impact that $2 billion will have. So the value proposition here, what do you get for $2 billion? So first of all, $1 billion will create new homes and save the homes that we have. 8,000 families, as a result of this investment, would have a new place to call home. Some will be ownership, some will be rental, but we need to build more housing to meet our growing population and business growth needs. And in addition, we know that it's extraordinarily cost effective to preserve the homes that we already have. And so that first billion would also help 10,000 families remain in their homes, in their affordable homes. All the result of this construction and rehab activity means that we would create 22,000 jobs. And again, this benefits Minnesota for generations to come. So the second billion is really about creating access and opportunity to housing. So later in this committee meeting, you're gonna hear about the Bring It Home campaign, and that's about providing essential rental assistance. We estimate that at least 137,000 low-income families in Minnesota will have access to homes they can afford through rental assistance. And this $1 billion also provides provides home ownership assistance to 17,000 families that could then have home buyer education and down payment assistance. And it also makes sure that 5,000 first generation homeowners can own their homes, because we know that investments like these are critical, not just for the homes and the stability they create, but because of the economic justice that can be achieved. Investing in housing will reduce racial disparities and expand choice for people of color who have been methodically and shamefully locked out of home ownership and wealth building opportunities that again could then set them on a path to success for generations to come. So we are asking you to say yes to invest. We are asking you to invest in Minnesota, invest in families, invest in housing. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to, we have other testifiers from housing sectors. We have testifiers from the business sector, from healthcare, and from education to talk about this as well. And I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say as well.
Thank you very much. We will first of all call on Lucava Hayes from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Bukata Hayes, and I'm the Vice President of Racial and Health Equity at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota. I am pleased to join you today to underscore the importance of the housing investments you are considering and to demonstrate the relationship between housing stability and health outcomes in our state. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota is the state's largest health plan, proudly serving approximately 2.6 million members. As we navigate a complex and changing healthcare landscape and face some of the deepest racial and health inequities of anywhere in our country, at Blue Cross, we fully recognize that 80% of health is influenced by factors outside of the walls of clinics and hospital settings. There are many social determinants that have the biggest impact on people's ability to be healthy, and stable housing is one of the most critical factors. This is an issue that is deeply personal to me. I sit before you as the proud product of investments like these in communities for those who most need. My mom, a respiratory therapist, raising four boys on a respiratory therapist salary, it meant we moved a lot until we were able to attain affordable housing, stable housing through an affordable housing complex. That allowed me and my brothers, one, to be more sort of intentional around schooling, stability in schooling in the same schools. It allowed us to, in essence, relieve some of the mental stress and stressors for both us and my mom, who was working hard outside of the home to make sure that we could be provided for inside of the home. And so an extensive literature review summarized in a 2018 Health Affairs Housing Policy Brief demonstrates very clearly that being without a stable home is detrimental to one's health. People who are chronically homeless face substantially higher morbidity in terms of both physical and mental health and of increased mortality. The trauma associated with unstable housing has longstanding adverse impacts on psychological well-being. These challenges result in persistently high healthcare expenditures due to emergency department and inpatient hospital use. A review of 25 studies that examined the impact of foreclosure on mental health and health behaviors, including substance abuse, found that all of the studies reported that foreclosure was associated with worsened outcomes, including depression, anxiety, increased alcohol use, psychological distress, and suicide. This is an issue that disproportionately impacts Black, Indigenous, and other people of color in our state. A long history of structural racism has created tremendous racial inequities in housing. We know that BIPOC households are more likely than white households to be extremely low income renters, and that BIPOC households disproportionately struggle to pay rent as compared to white households. There is, however, hopeful news about the impact of the affordable housing investments on improving health and reducing healthcare costs. A study done on a population of nearly 10,000 people in Oregon with unstable housing showed that the provision of affordable housing decreased Medicaid expenditures by 12%. In addition, use of outpatient primary care increased by 20% and emergency department use declined by 18%. At Blue Cross, we've taken some of our own steps to address housing instability within the Medicaid populations that we serve. In the last few years, we have invested over $1 million to create 45 additional units of housing and to improve access to culturally specific care for the Indigenous community experiencing housing instability. In Greater Minnesota, 30% of our investments have supported BIPOC households. And as I finished up the personal story about my mom, years later, my mom was able to buy her first home long after us four boys have been out of the house, and her four boys have all been able to attain home ownership. Based off of that really pivotal moment of attaining affordable housing in between our middle school and high school years. So I thank you for your leadership in addressing the very important housing needs that we have in our state and for the opportunity to share my testimony with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. And we are joined now by Jonathan Weinhagen from the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. Mr. Weinhagen, please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, Jonathan Weinhagen, President and CEO of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. And thank you to my colleagues who have gone before me for the great information they've provided. Our organization represents nearly 2,300 companies and organizations across the metro region, and grateful to be here to emphasize the critical nature of housing investments that you are all considering this session and beyond. We believe that housing is essential to the prosperity of our region and our state and the success of all people at all income levels, which is why our chamber has prioritized housing as one of our key advocacy issues. We often remind folks that housing is part of our economic infrastructure, not dissimilar to roads and transit and broadband and our workforce generally. I think we can all agree that home took on a whole new meaning over the course of the past 2 years. It's where we worked, it's where we taught our kids. And that is why making significant investments is even more important than ever. You may notice that my office today is my dining room table. We've seen the studies that show the benefits of stable housing, and I think Mr. Hayes with Blue Cross did an outstanding job of framing the social determinants. Two of the things that stuck out to me were that 80% of health is influenced beyond hospitals and clinics by other factors such as housing. And the word that struck me to my core was mortality. We often talk about things as whether or not they're life or death. I think he did a good job of framing that there are elements of this issue that you're talking about today that are just that. Ms. Mavity did a great job of framing the request and the ask. I won't regurgitate that. I will highlight the thing that we always like to highlight, and that's the job creation. 22,000 jobs created as a part of this. The same way we would talk about an investment in infrastructure of transportation or broadband or otherwise, it's important to highlight both the impact on families, 8,000 families, house, 10,000 families staying in their home, but the job creation and the economic opportunity that an investment like this could create for our region and our state. This may feel unprecedented, and that's because it is. And yeah, I'd like to remind you that we are in unprecedented times. It may feel a little cliche 2 years into a global pandemic, but I would remind you that unprecedented times call for unprecedented response, and in this case, unprecedented investment. As we continue on our path towards economic recovery, and I know that we all are all linking arms to move into the next phase of this pandemic, increasing our housing supply needs to be a big component of that. In part because it was a big issue before we entered the pandemic, and this has only been exacerbated by the last 2 years. As you're considering these investments, I would urge you to remember the critical role that housing plays in our everyday lives. Housing is a competitiveness issue. We need to continue to attract talent and retain the workforce and talent that we have today. Housing is a workforce issue. We know that our communities have jobs available, and a lack of housing is one of the main roadblocks to connecting people to those opportunities. We believe that housing is increasingly a public safety issue. Everyone, no matter who they are, deserves to have a safe place to call home. It's foundational. And most importantly, access to safe housing, as you've heard before, should be considered a basic right. I appreciate the leadership that each of you provides and the time to be here with you today. Happy to stand for questions as we proceed with the hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Weinhagen. And we are joined now by Sonia Wadina, who from the Bemidji Area Schools. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. I see you're on the screen and not muted, but we don't hear you. Sonia Wadina, Bemidji Area Schools. Mr. Worth, do we have a technical issue? She appears to be unmuted, but.
Madam Chair, I don't, I'm not sure what the issue is, but we could move on to the next testifier, come back.
All right, let's see if we can go back to it. And that is Brett Domstrand, the Lakeville Area Public Schools. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Brett Domstrand, and I am the principal at Lake Marion Elementary in the Lakeville Area Public Schools. Again, I just want to say thanks to everybody who's already testified. My angle is a little bit different because as a leader of an elementary school of 750 students, I see how important stable housing is for our students. When we think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and we think about shelter as one of the primary features, is it's not just having a home, it's having a home that lasts your elementary career. We found if we have a student that starts with us from kindergarten and we keep them through fifth grade, we will have them reading and writing at standards for it's almost bar none, because we have access to interventions. We have access to the other tools that help students. When we have students who only are here temporarily for 1 year or short-term housing, or they're facing homelessness, we see that there's a degradation in grades. It's oftentimes we will see students who aren't as prepared for their day. And so when we think about what stable housing looks like, I just say that we need to invest in, I'm gonna mention Lakeville as a specific place. We are growing rapidly. And one of the things as we see all these building permits come is there's a lot of industry that's following. And as these industries are coming, there isn't enough affordable housing for our employees to come set up and then send their kids to good schools. And there's not a single parent that I talk to that ever says, well, I don't want to go to your schools. I would rather go to school somewhere else and just commute every day. Parents want to live in the communities where they work, and they want their kids to be able to do that because it makes it easier for childcare and all the things that Bukata was talking about as well. They all come in hand. So I just really want to say that affordable housing is accessibility, and it's accessibility for all. And everyone has that, everyone needs that right to be able to find affordable housing in the communities that they want to live.
Thank you very much, Mr. Domstead. Mr. Worth, I think I saw a comment from Sonia Wadena in the chat. Did I?
Madam Chair, just 1 second. Let's see if we can try her again.
I think she said her speaker wasn't working or something.
It doesn't appear that that she's able to connect right now.
Okay. Well, we were represented by Bemidji Area Schools, we'll look forward to getting some more information from them. Questions? I don't see. I don't see any hands raised. So I think we're. Thank you all for being here and for your. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to just make a comment, and I guess maybe a question for Mr. Weinhagen, in terms of. Well, one, just thank you to the presentation. And I think it's really helpful for us in this committee to really understand the deep intersection that housing plays with just about every other issue we're addressing here at the Capitol, whether it be our economic recovery, gaps in education, gaps in health, all roads really do lead back to home. And I'm curious on it was brought up by our superintendent, there's been a lot of discussion about our workforce shortage that we have in this state coming out of this pandemic. And I'm curious if Mr. Weinhagen or any other testifiers just had a comment about the intersection that housing plays with workforce shortage, which on a bipartisan basis, I think everyone acknowledges one of our key challenges to address this session.
Mr. Weinhagen.
Madam Chair, Representative Howard, thank you for the question. And I think you've highlighted one of the things that we talk about on a national scale. We're here today to talk about the housing challenges and shortages in our state and in our region, but we know that we're facing these across the country. When we talk about workforce housing and housing generally being a competitiveness issue, that's what we're talking about. The regions and the states that solve for this, that invest in this, are going to be the regions and the states that continue to attract and retain the very workforce that we hear from businesses, large and small, every day that they need to continue to grow in our region and state. So when you framed it really well, Representative, this is so interconnected. When I say housing is a workforce issue, it's not a tagline, it's a reality.
Representative Igbaje.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Similarly, I kind of just have some additional, just want to thank the presenters today. I'm just really highlighting all the connections between housing and everything else. I think I really want to go back to also the health aspect of it. For so many people, just the ability to have a home as a place to recuperate, as a place to get well, as a place to hold your medications. I think that's something that we really need to highlight, especially for children, and that making sure that they have a stable home, that their parents are able to maintain a home, I think goes a really long way. So I thank Mr. Hayes for sharing his personal story today, And if he has anything to add on just kind of the health outcomes that they've been able to see across the board with people who have stable housing, it'd be great to hear. So thank you.
Mr. Hayes?
Yeah, Madam Chair and committee rep, I would say, I think what we clearly see, and so I'll just use this quick analogy, is that we clearly understood health and home impacts when it was around lead paint, asbestos, right? I mean, we clearly were able to make that connection. I think now we're clearly able to see over these past 2 years around mental health, right? And the need for mental health based on the pandemic, but also based on the uncertainty around, can I stay in my home during the pandemic? And I think that becomes a really essential part to the notion of home and how that impacts health. And from the study, again, stable housing reduced the use of the ER or the emergency room as primary care. That's a really important thing as we're trying to address and healthcare gaps, and in particular, preventative measures that we all can do to improve our health. And so that's one really tangible way in which stable housing helps improve health, and in particular has a direct impact on health equity. And there's other ways too, and I could be sure to forward some other studies to this committee on the impact of housing on health and health equity.
And we can certainly share that with the whole committee then. Thank you. So thanks. I don't see any other hands. Thank you all for being here and for your great work that went into putting this proposal together. And we will now move on to, Representative Gomez has a hand up, sorry.
Sorry, hold on. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm grateful for when allies come together, but I just feel like I have to say something, which is that it's hard for me to see business interests come in front of our committee and advocate for investments when one of the major issues that we find in the housing market is that we have this context of skyrocketing housing prices and stagnating wages over decades and decades. And this has become really very pronounced recently when, you know, every study basically shows that a low wage worker in any city in our country cannot afford a basic two bedroom apartment on a full-time kind of work schedule. And so, you know, I'm happy when we come together with unlikely allies, but, you know, when you advocate against minimum wage policies and against earned sick and safe time policies and against the interests of workers, and then come and advocate in favor of, you know, public investment in things that will directly, you know, accrue benefits to, you know, to businesses and to those who are making the decisions about whether or not to continue and reinforce and deepen this disparity between wages and the cost of living for workers, while, you know, executive compensation goes up, shareholder profits go up. You know, it kind of rubs me the wrong way. And so I felt like I had to say that. And, you know, I would invite our chambers of commerce to stop suing us over earned sick and safe time, to stop suing us over minimum wages, to stop suing us over like suppressing workers' rights and benefits for workers, and to join us in thinking about the economy in a more complete way. And to understand that, you know, if we have record CEO compensation and record profits and record stock market, you know, kind of inflation and record low sort of, you know, inflation adjusted wages for workers, like us, the government coming in and trying to fill that gap, like we can't, we can only do so much. So please join us in just advocating for working people, right? Not just advocating for the people who are in the C-suites and the interests of, you know, the companies that are extracting profits from our communities, like advocate for the people, advocate for the workers who keep the businesses going. So thank you.
We'll no doubt be talking much more about all of that in this legislative session. Moving on then to our next item of business is a bill hearing for House File 40, establishing a state rent assistance program. Representative Howard, would you like to move your bill to get that before us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 40 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
So Howard moves House File 40 be laid over for possible inclusion. There is an author's amendment. My understanding, Representative Howard, is that's a technical amendment that was suggested by our fiscal analyst as something that the bill requires for clarity. Do you want to just speak briefly to that?
Yes, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment basically would just change a year in the bill to get it up to speed, so to speak. And so with that, I would move the A1 amendment.
So before you have an author's technical amendment, Representative Howard moves that A1 amendment. Any question or discussion about the A1 amendment? If not, if you would all unmute yourselves, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay?
Nay.
The motion prevails and the bill is in the shape that the author intends. Representative Howard, please proceed with your presentation and then we have some testifiers to follow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 40 is the Bring It Home bill. It's something this committee has heard before. It's even more important than ever. And the presentations we've had earlier in this hearing really underscore that. We have an extreme supply-demand mismatch with housing, especially for housing that's affordable for low and middle-income Minnesotans. And we've seen rent skyrocket in the last decade, significantly more than wages. And as a result, right now, 500,000 Minnesotans are paying too much for their housing. That means their cost burden, it's a technical term where folks are paying more than 30% of their income in housing. And right now, there are more than 200,000 severely cost burden renters, folks that are paying more than 50% of their income in rent. And I would encourage every member of the committee to consider what that would be like to be paying 50, 60, 70% of your income in rent. When you're doing that, you're one crisis away, one missed shift, one sickness, one health issue away from being in real crisis. Some of those Minnesotans have access to a housing voucher through the federal government, but only one in four Minnesotans who are eligible for a Section 8 housing voucher actually receive one. And what the Bring It Home bill will do, House File 40 will do, will be to create a state-based rental assistance program to fill this gap, so that everyone who qualifies for a housing voucher would receive one. And let's be clear, this effort is more important than ever. We've seen the value and importance of housing assistance throughout this pandemic, a pandemic that we're still in. But as you know, resources have been expended from federal rental assistance. Most of the protections on the eviction moratorium have lapsed, and folks are still struggling to make ends meet and keep their head above water. Bring It Home Minnesota and state-based rental assistance is the right solution at the right time. We have a historic budget surplus and we have the opportunity to meet Minnesotans where they're at to address historic economic challenges they face. This bill is elegant in its simplicity because we rely on existing local housing authorities, folks who already understand local needs, to manage and distribute funds in an easy, seamless manner. In doing so, we'd fill the gap and help hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans who qualify for a voucher to receive one and bring stability to renters, landlords, and communities across the state. If fully realized, there's no single policy initiative that we believe could do more to directly eliminate homelessness than this one, because when rent is more manageable, budgets stretch further, families can afford the essentials, all things that are going up. And I want to mention that there's been a lot of discussion about inflation and their impact on families. The Minnesota legislature doesn't have a lot of direct tools to address inflation, but to the members of this committee, that are concerned about inflation, then you should support this bill. For many families, rent is the single largest monthly expense, and it keeps going up and up. So if we want to help Minnesotans cope with this spike in the price of milk, well, let's make sure they can afford their home. Let's focus on the tools we do have, including the powerful tool of state-based rental assistance. Lastly, I just want to mention to the resource question, can we afford to do this? I argue that it would be much more costly not to proceed. There really is something perverse about having a $7, $8 billion surplus when Minnesotans are sleeping out in the cold. And the reality is our state spends less than 1% of its general fund budget to address housing. This consistent underfunding has played a central role in creating the housing crisis that we have that is crippling our economy, widening racial gaps, and preventing our state from progress in so many ways. This bill is a chance to break away from the status quo and bring a solution to our housing crisis that meets the scope of the challenge. There are so many ripple benefits, that would come with this package. State and counties would be able to spend far less on county services, saving communities tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. And we've already heard about the links between achievement in our schools for our students. This would help bring stability to our students and greatly improve our racial equity gaps in our schools, and the list goes on. So I'll turn it over to testifiers, but the stability of home touches every aspect of our lives, and this is a bill to make sure that we guarantee that foundation to every Minnesotan.
And I just want to hold up the work of Beacon. I can remember, this is a faith-based organization, and I can remember really a number of years ago that they first came to me with this idea. They had identified this problem. And I think it was when you see the failure of the federal Section 8 that people may qualify and apply and wait for years. And so Beacon brought this issue before us and have never given up. They have just been working on this particular issue. So I just want to commend them. I have the sense that I need to at least reference a story in this morning's newspaper as a reality. There were two boys, two young men, who went exploring in a storm tunnel. And while exploring in the storm tunnel, they found a dead body. They called 911, and police came and investigated and determined that this person had likely frozen to death. And then they determined by other things they found in the storm tunnel that this person had likely been living in this storm tunnel. That's the reality of one particular neighborhood. When the neighbors who lived near there heard about this, the emotional response was just incredible to think somebody nearby was in those dire straits and that the neighbors weren't in a position to help. And I think what they were saying is, if we knew, we would have figured out a way to help. And that's underlying so much of what we're bringing before you today. So we do have a number of people testifying. The first one is Paul Williams, Project for Pride and Living. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Williams. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Howard for addressing this issue. I'm Paul Williams. I'm the president and CEO of Project for Pride and Living. PPL is a nonprofit that builds hope, assets, and self-reliance for folks across this community. We own and manage close to 1,600 units of affordable housing in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and suburban areas. And really, about 3,500 folks live with us every night. Vast majority of those, 85, 90% of those folks are folks of color. We have a combination of deeply affordable housing for folks coming out of the shelter system, as well as what we call workforce housing, family of four earning, let's say, $40,000, $45,000 a year. So really good testimony this morning, and I'm going to reiterate some of what you've heard, because I think the case is really that compelling. We know that this housing crisis affects about a quarter of all Minnesotans. 25% of everyone in the state is cost burdened in their housing. And that's just not those that we see on our streets, but also those who just struggle to pay their rent. Those who must decide between the rent or the heat, the rent or their medication, the rent or food. We can quantify that. It's about, again, 550,000 folks whose lives are in a state of housing instability. At PPL, we've seen that struggle with our own residents and folks who come to live with us literally every day. And in this last 2 years, as you've heard from a number of folks, this multiple pandemics obviously
has just proven how central housing stability is to so many facets of life. You heard from Bukata, housing is healthcare, right? If you didn't have stable housing this last couple of years, and I would argue it was true before then even, you really were in danger of catching this virus and dying. Housing, as you heard from the principal down in Lakeville, is education. We are educating our young people from home. Housing, as you heard from Jonathan Weinhagen in the chamber, is actually jobs and workforce development. Housing has always been childcare. And so what we've seen is that housing really is this core stability. And I think as you heard from Representative Howard, it dwarfs all of the other household costs combined, still don't equal the impact of housing and what a central cost that is for most Minnesota households. So we really do believe that this is a workforce development issue. It has everything to do with our economic competitiveness. I've been honored to be serving as the co-chair of the Governor's Council on Economic Expansion. And in our initial phase of work this last fall, I can't tell you, we heard in every corner of the state from folks in business, in healthcare, in human services, how central housing stability is to their lives and to especially to kind of stable, building a stable workforce. So it is central. The Bring It Home campaign is a big idea without a doubt. We know what works to alleviate the housing problem. Production, supply matters a ton. Really grateful for, you heard from us actually in this committee last week, even from PPL, how critical, right, the production tools are to all of this. Property tax relief for affordable units, all of those are important supply side issues. But the reality is we've got an income problem, right? We've got an income problem here. And this housing crisis is fundamentally about people not having adequate income to be able to pay their rent or afford even their modest mortgages. And so Bring It Home seeks to supplement that household income with the assistance that's needed to keep folks stable and in their homes. And at PPL, we measure two-year housing stability. So if folks are stable in our housing for 24 months, we see a lot of other things come together. And I can't tell you how many times I've been out to talk with our residents who said, you know, I've been here just a few months even, you know, and already the kids are doing better in school. Why? As we heard from the principal, right? They're not moving multiple times a year, right? We hear how everything else, I'm able to now to start getting to my, you know, to take care of my healthcare issues and to get out and finish off my training. So this is a smart investment. And as I said before, it's also an equity issue. We know how hard this pandemic has been on our BIPOC communities. Affordable housing or a lack of affordable housing has been a critical issue in communities of color for many, many years, I think as you heard before. So you also heard from Representative Howard, we have the systems in place to move these funds. And as you heard earlier, right now we're spending about 0.3% of our state budget on housing needs. This proposal would move that up to 1%. I would argue that's an investment that would drive an incredible return. It creates a platform, a springboard for stability and prosperity for all folks. So it's when folks can afford to focus on those other issues in their household, a lot of other things start to come together. So we've got a lot of work to do. I would encourage all of us to think about what it really would mean to really put this problem behind us and allow us to get on with the business of growth and prosperity. I thank you for your consideration and look forward to taking any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. We're joined now by Irene Fernando, who is a Hennepin County Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Hussman and members, my name is Irene Fernando, Hennepin County Commissioner for District 2, which includes Plymouth, Medicine Lake, Golden Valley, St. Anthony Village, and the northern third of Minneapolis. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 40, authored by Representative Howard. This bill is important because it will close the gap in funding so that every family gets the rent support that they need to ensure that all Minnesotans have a safe place to lay their heads at night. This assists in job retention, improves health outcomes, and strengthens educational attainment for youth and adults. Hennepin County's vision for our services continuum is to ensure that homelessness is rare, brief, and non-recurring, and that all residents have equitable access to increased housing stability. Too many of our neighbors continue to struggle to make rent month after month. It's imperative that the state of Minnesota expands rental assistance by passing House Bill 40 to ensure more residents can maintain this stable housing. Rental support is an essential investment because it allows government to help families in immediate need today and not force them into homelessness while they wait for the market to build housing that they can afford. Housing construction alone cannot get us out of the housing affordability crisis. We need a variety of solutions and investments to tackle this growing issue, from constructing supportive housing at the deepest levels of affordability to the vouchers that have already been referenced for cost-burdened families to stay in their homes, and concrete efforts to ensure that workers' wages align with the significant increase in expenses and inflation. Housing cost burden, as stated already, means families are paying more than 30% of their income towards housing. Currently, about a third of Hennepin households are cost burdened, and the scarcity of affordable housing for low-income families disproportionately impacts our residents of colors and families earning less than 30% of the area median income. Why are we talking about income? Because that's how we talk about housing affordability. Affordable housing begins at 80% and lower. And so when we're talking about 30% and lower of AMI, that is $31,000 for a family of four. And for a family of four at 30% AMI, they are paying 50 or 60% of their incredibly low income towards housing. This is what everyone who's experiencing homelessness in our community has in common. Almost 95% of all families and individuals experiencing homelessness have incomes below 30% AMI. In 2019, more than 800 families stayed in the county's homeless shelter system. In 2021, because of the widespread availability of rental assistance and evictions protections, this was reduced to about 300 families in shelter for that whole year, 800 to 300. This dramatic reduction in family homelessness meant there were hundreds fewer children in homeless shelters every single night. So now is the time to invest and to prevent a return to those pre-pandemic numbers. Almost 20% of single adults who stay in Hennepin shelters, which is about 1,800 people a year, have earned income. These are individuals with jobs that are just too low of income, too erratic of income to sustain stable housing without assistance. So imagine working a full-time job or two and still not knowing where your loved ones will rest their head at night. We are inadvertently trapping people in homelessness. And so now is the time. I'm so grateful. And it's also economically advantageous because the financial cost of shelter is extremely high and only increasing. Hennepin has committed more than $45 million in our American Rescue Plan funding and faces an $11 million annual financial cliff starting in 2025 when it comes to our shelter system. So where shall we invest that? In shelters, in rental assistance? Of course, it's all of the above. And so I think we need to do everything we can to make rental assistance available to every Minnesotan who qualifies. And that's why I'm testing in favor of this bill today. Our neighbors and loved ones are in crisis, and we have the opportunity and responsibility to act and assist them in this pain. Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm available to answer any questions and, of course, appreciate the time.
Thank you, Ms. Fernando. And we're joined now by Asael Sol Young from Urban Homeworks. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Howard, and members of the committee. My name is Asael Sol Young. I use she or they pronouns, and I'm the Executive Director of Urban Homeworks. At Urban Homeworks, our mission is to perpetuate the hope of Jesus Christ through innovative community development. Our vision is neighbors raising their collective voice to address injustice and overcome the barriers that perpetuate inequity. We've been working in the affordable housing space for over 26 years with a focus on affordable rental and home ownership, with community building and development at the center. As Representative Howard stated, the stability of home touches every aspect of our lives. The Bring It Home bill proposes to provide rent subsidies for any individual or family making less than 50% of the area median income and currently paying more than 30% of their income on rent. We know that nearly 500,000 Minnesotan households are cost burdened. This bill proposes a rent subsidy, which is a cost-effective solution for housing stability that does not require landlords to take a hit, making it harder for them to maintain dignified, affordable housing. And while vouchers and subsidies don't fix all of the systemic, racist, and economic inequities embedded in our housing system, they are a step toward long-term solutions. For struggling families across our state, where BIPOC families are disproportionately impacted by high rent and predatory landlords. Redlining, racial covenants, deed restrictions, and strategic disinvestment in BIPOC communities have left over half of Black renters across the state cost burdened. Rent vouchers are a proven solution toward equity and economic stability for low-income families. These vouchers would provide space for more families to invest in their health and wellness and even save for home ownership. So on behalf of the nearly 500,000 families currently cost burdened in this state, I urge you to include Bring It Home Minnesota in your budget this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Young, for your testimony. We're joined now by Melissa Taphorn, the Washington County Community Development Agency. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the Executive Director of the Washington County Community Development Agency, and I'm also the Legislative Committee Co-Chair of the Minnesota Chapter of NARO, which stands for the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. So we represent the local housing authorities that would be rolling out this program. And I'm very happy today to speak in favor of House File 40 on behalf of the 140 housing authorities in Minnesota NARO. One of the primary programs our members operate is the Housing Choice Voucher Program. That's the federal tenant-based rental assistance program that we've been discussing. And we serve over 31,000 households across the state, which sounds like an impressive number until you learn that there's another 90,000 renters who qualify for those programs but are not able to access them because HUD has not made new vouchers available since the late 1980s, except for a handful of specialty vouchers that are targeted towards homeless populations. Rental assistance helps participants afford to pay for their rent, resulting in greater job stability and higher school achievement, as we've heard. And rental assistance helps stabilize housing costs until the family can earn enough to afford their rent. On average, families participate in our rental assistance programs for 3 years, and then the voucher is recycled to another family from our wait list. Rental assistance is not only beneficial to those families, it strengthens our communities. Landlords can afford to pay their property taxes and keep their properties in good condition. As well, businesses can find employees who live in the area. Last week, Minnesota Housing Partnership shared their statewide housing data from their 2021 state of the state's housing and with this committee. And I would like to emphasize three key data points as they relate to this proposal. This is a statewide problem. Over 250,000 Minnesota renters are paying more than they can afford towards rent and utilities. Minnesota Housing Partnership shared a map, if you recall, that showed the percent of cost burden renters by county in shades of red. And the counties with the highest proportion of cost burden renters are, the top five are Waseca, Clay, Couchiching, Beltrami, and Blue Earth. And those are all, Washington County ranks as 15th among the 87 counties. We're all above 50% of our renters being cost burden. Even the smallest, the lowest ranked county, Cook County, it still affects 25% of their renters who are paying more than 30% of their income towards rent. My second point, problem is growing. The proportion of cost burden renters have grown over the past 20 years as rents have increased faster than incomes. This isn't gonna go away. Washington County has the highest median rent at $1,307 per month, which leaves little for food, healthcare, daycare, and discretionary spending. We cannot await for incomes to catch up or for an adjustment in the housing market. This pandemic has tripled the number of calls my agency receives each week seeking income-based rentals. And my third point, this is a solution for today and tomorrow. There is a 65,000 unit supply gap of units affordable to extremely low-income Minnesotans, a gap we cannot wait to or afford to fill through new construction. Tenant-based rental assistance can fill that gap instantly as one of the most cost-effective means of making apartments affordable and accessible to low-income Minnesotans. The rental assistance program proposed in House File 40 can immediately help the seniors, the veterans, and the families who are struggling to make ends meet. Minnesota NARO members, your local housing authorities, have the trained staff, landlord relationships, procedures, computer systems, and other delivery tools already in place to immediately roll out this program. We can bring it home for all Minnesotans. And imagine what economic advantages our state will have when our low-income families and seniors have stable and affordable apartments. Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for your leadership on this issue and the opportunity to share Minnesota NARO's support for House File 40. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taphorn. Excellent testimony. And we're joined now by Linda Stage from AON. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Linda Stage, and I am here to speak on behalf of the Bring It Home Minnesota campaign. In 1996, I went through a very difficult divorce. I had been in an abusive relationship, and in the settlement, my husband got everything, all my savings, my retirement funds, and more. I had worked my entire life as a nurse and a nursing instructor in institutions like the University of Minnesota, helping to educate caregivers in my community. But when my husband left, I could no longer afford the rent on my house. I began to search for other housing options. I looked at low-income housing and senior housing throughout the Twin Cities area, but I couldn't find anything that I would qualify for. I had no other choice but to live out of my car. I am a diabetic, and it was hard to even find a place to store my insulin, which does need to be refrigerated. I was lucky that it was summertime and not the frigid temperatures of a Minnesota winter. But knowing the change of season was around the corner, it motivated me to continue searching for other housing options. Through the grapevine, an employee at AON found out that I was homeless, and he worked to get me an apartment within the organization. But the rent, even though it was considered affordable, was difficult for me to cover on my own. At the end of the month, I had only $300 left for groceries and other necessities. The resident connection team here in the building eventually helped me get a unit that was subsidized. Now I have the opportunity to grow. I've become involved in volunteer groups, and I'm proud to say that my group of friends at the property participate in various volunteer opportunities each year. For the first time in my life, I can say that I have friendships. I have also a place where I can store my temperature-controlled medication and where my grandchildren can come and visit me. I can host them in my own space and know that it's a safe place for them to be. I have the opportunity to get excited about my life again. As a senior, my journey may not look like the face of homelessness, but here I am. I am only one person out of hundreds and thousands that experience housing instability due to health, domestic abuse, or mental illness. With legislation like Bring It Home Minnesota, we can help those that are going through the things that I did and make it easier for them to now navigate housing instability. If it wasn't for AON and my housing voucher, my life would still be in limbo. I am extremely grateful for them, and it has been a lifesaver in the long run. Please include Bring It Home Minnesota in the housing budget this year. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for telling your story. It's very helpful to put this in context, our discussion today. We're grateful you're here. We're joined now by John Cole, Churches United in Ministry, otherwise known as CHUM. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Cole, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good day to you, Chair Hausman, Representative Howard, members of the Housing, Finance, and Policy Committee, and fellow testifiers. My name is John Cole, and I'm the Executive Director of CHUM, in Duluth, Minnesota, the largest shelter provider north of the Twin Cities, serving persons experiencing homelessness from around St. Louis County, and sometimes as far south as Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm grateful for this opportunity to speak today in support of HF 40 and Bring It Home Minnesota. Now, you may be wondering why a shelter provider would be supporting rent subsidies for those already housed. And let me explain. See, CHUM also operates the primary food shelf in Duluth, and we have been deeply impacted by increasing rates of hunger and homelessness in our community. Food insecurity is very real, as reflected by the increase in our food distribution numbers, 389,000 pounds distributed in 2020, 447,000 in 2021. 50% of Duluthians need affordable housing, and many live precariously. COVID-19 exacerbated the pressure on household budgets as the cost of living increased. Fuel prices are over $1.08 per gallon higher than they were a year ago, the highest rate in 7 years. Supply problems, transportation problems, and labor problems have really increased food prices. Households are reeling, yet wages have not increased, as Representative Gomez so forcefully highlighted. Households precariously poised are now inching closer to that cliff towards homelessness. And the shelter sector has no capacity to absorb them. We have been operating beyond capacity for some time now. For a few years now, 80 of our 87 counties have reported being overwhelmed by the need for shelter. So I think you begin to understand why a shelter provider is supporting Bring It Home Minnesota. Rent Help Minnesota is gone. The shelter safety net is busted. We must address the situation and avert impending crisis by preventing more than 25% of Minnesota households, that are those cost burdened, from sliding over the cliff into homelessness. More than 70,000 homeowners and 60,000 renters in Minnesota are behind on housing payments, twice what we normally see. If we let them fall, they will create an even greater burden on state and city resources to respond to them. And we can do better than this, and we must do better than this. It is more cost-effective to avoid this likely eventuality than to react to its occurrence. Prevention is better than cure. And Bring It Home Minnesota is the prevention that is needed. This provision will provide rent vouchers for all eligible low-income Minnesotans, so they only pay 30% of their income towards rent. Now, in St. Louis County, rents increased 25% in 2021, while incomes rose 8%. Any household in Minnesota that earns less than 50% of the area median income and who pays more than 30% of their income towards rent will be eligible for this program. And this includes over 22,000 households in St. Louis County, over 9,000 of which pay over 50% of their income on housing. Here is another thing that Bring It Home Minnesota will do. It will help persons currently sheltered to transition back to the standard housing market. As shelter and homeless service providers, we work really hard to come alongside and stabilize persons experiencing homelessness and help them gain an income stream, earn a wage. But after all of that, sometimes years of service investment, their income falls far short of what it takes to rent an apartment. So the options are raise earnings or reduce housing costs. Can you raise earnings? I think it would be hard to legislate that. But we can make housing accessible through Bring It Home Minnesota. You can make it easier for persons to exit homelessness because you can fill the gap between the cost of renting an apartment and what 30% of their income is. The only way to address this is through Bring It Home Minnesota. A rent subsidy can provide the support they need at that crucial juncture, a home, offering the security to focus on aspects of health, education, occupational advancement, and community relationships, all values and impacts that Mr. Hayes and Grandma DeLong benefited from. It forms the foundation of our society, and it creates capacity for successful citizenship. An investment of $1 billion into rental assistance could make this happen this year. Thank you for listening to me, and I'll be available for questions. Please invest in housing this session and include Bring It Home Minnesota in your housing budget.
Thank you, Mr. Cole, for your testimony. And we have one final testifier, Kulia Pringle from the National Parents Union. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I am with the National Parents Union. I work one-on-one with Minnesota families as they navigate the education system. And as I do my work, I often encounter, because I build relationships with families, and I can't just say, oh, I'm going to help you navigate this system when they're about to face homelessness or they can't pay their rent. So I see firsthand how families struggle with rental assistance or trying to get out of a homelessness situation. And so I'm here to support and represent the BIPOC community that I work with, as well as the low-income families that I work with to support House File 40. As everybody has spoken before me has said that, you know, the federal poverty guideline says that a person is spending 30% of their income on food. And we know that's not the reality. Most families are spending half or more of their income on housing. And I saw firsthand how Rent Help Minnesota helped so many families get through a traumatic situation of losing their jobs and not being able to make rent. I, too, myself know the dramatic things that happen. I've been homeless myself. When I was working, I would go to work and know that when I got out of work, I would have to go to my car, find somewhere else to go, or pay for housing through hotels, which is even more cost burden because it's approximately $400 to $500 a week just to pay for a hotel for a room. So that's even when you become homeless, it costs even more just to live than it would be if you were in a stable home. I've seen families struggle because I'm coming from an education standpoint where academic outcomes are impacted by students being homelessness. Suspensions are impacted by students being homelessness. Black children as a reality are being overly referred to special education because of emotional behavior disorders, which contributes to an unstable home. And again, I watched myself when I was homeless, knowing that even though I would try to put on a smile when we were in the car with my daughter, knowing that I was depressed, knowing that I didn't feel good about myself because I couldn't make rent. I didn't have a place for my daughter to do her homework. And it put a tremendous burden on me. And so that burden was placed on her. And so that led to her downfall when it came to her stability at homes. And so I'm just so glad that this conversation is being held. It's past time and it's past overdue. I'm just glad that it's here that folks are talking about it right now. And I'm glad for the opportunity to speak about that. And again, I just want to reiterate that passing this bill would have a tremendous impact on the families that I work with. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pringle. Questions, members? I see no hands raised, members. Representative Howard, do you have some concluding comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to thank all the testifiers who really laid out such a compelling case for this bill and its multitude of positive impacts going forward. I guess as I move the bill, what I'm struck with is how, in terms of the benefits of this bill, it's about the biggest no-brainer that we could have before us, because it's going to help us improve educational outcomes, health outcomes. It's going to grow our economy and create more stability for families going forward. It's the biggest no-brainer in terms of the positive impacts. So really what it is before this legislature, before our committee, and before the entire legislature is, do we have the political will to take a step that's bold, that's a new direction, to make a big difference. And I think if we listen to the balance of the testifiers, we should follow on our instincts to go bold and to bring it home. And so with that, Madam Chair, I would renew my motion to lay House File 40 over as amended.
Thank you to all the testifiers, and thank you to Representative Howard. House File 40, as amended, is laid over. Our next meeting will be on Thursday, February 17th at 10:30. So this gets us adjourned in time to be able to get to session easily by noon. Thank you all for your participation. There being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.